I'd like now to welcome to the program Tyson Slocum. He's the director of Public Citizens Clean Energy Program in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Yeah, great to be here.
So as we talked about with John Fogarty earlier, New Mexico is considering several possibilities for carbon caps and or cap and trade programs. And the people who are opposed to these programs are saying that states shouldn't take individual action in the absence of federal legislation. What is your take on that?
Well, I think if we wait for the federal government to take action, it might be too late. There's a 20-year history of states taking the lead on a number of progressive environmental and climate issues ultimately led the federal government to follow those initiatives. So whether you're talking about the regional greenhouse gas initiative in the northeastern United States, in which many states participate in a cap-and-trade program in the electric power sector, or initiatives underway in California and the western United States, I think that it's important that states have the flexibility and opportunity to show leadership where our federal elected officials haven't.
New Mexico is a relatively poor state with a significant amount of jobs and revenue that come from the oil and gas industries. How do you see a state like ours? I mean, the states that you mentioned, I don't think they've really been so much oil and gas producing states. How do you see a state like ours developing a clean energy future with a viable economy and also balance the oil and gas industries that we have with new energies?
Sure. Well, first, California is actually a major oil and gas producing state. It produces far more oil and gas than New Mexico does. It also is a leader in clean energy technology. So I think that what the goal here is that you can understand that putting a price on carbon, instituting some strong regulations to try to reduce our use of fossil fuels is not going to put the fossil fuel business out of commission. It's just going to curtail its growth and eventually lead us to replace it with cleaner, more efficient technologies. We've got a number of federal research centers in New Mexico that ought to be hubs of clean technology innovation. And there's also a lot of opportunity in New Mexico for rooftop solar, some wind power, for geothermal. So just because, New Mexico currently is more dominated by oil and gas interests, doesn't mean that it always should be or is going to be. The future is renewable energy. Any way you look at it, fossil fuels are going to be extinct, just like the dinosaurs and plants that fed these fossil fuels. So the question is whether or not New Mexico and other states are going to assume a leadership role and position themselves to be at the forefront of these innovations, or whether or not they'll be playing catch-up.
When we talk about fossil fuels becoming extinct, what's the time? I mean, I know it's a question that can't be answered, but do we have any sense of how much of our world's gas and oil we've actually already taken out of the ground? I mean, how many years do we have left, which would be terrible for climate change purposes, but even if we were to rely only on that, how many years do we have left?
I mean, we still have a lot of years left, especially with unconventional fossil fuels like the tar sands up in Canada or in shale gas formations. These are more problematic, more expensive ways to extract oil and gas. So there is a lot more environmentally damaging and expensive to get at fossil fuels. But the fact is that the planet is going to suffer irreparable harm if we continue to utilize fossil fuels at the rate that we have been. Climate change is real. It is caused in part by our record consumption and burning of fossil fuels. And we as a society need to start taking aggressive steps to utilize cleaner technologies, which are widely available. The question is whether or not we've got the political courage to change the rules and regulations to stop incentivizing fossil fuels and to start incentivizing cleaner technologies.
The Environmental Protection Agency issued an endangerment finding in 2009. What was that?
Well, what that was about was it was in response to a 2007 Supreme Court ruling that the Environmental Protection Agency has the authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, just as they have the authority to regulate mercury and other harmful emissions from power plants and tailpipe exhaust. So what the EPA did was that they found that greenhouse gas emissions are endangering the environment and public health, and that sets the stage for the EPA to start issuing regulations to curtail our industrial production of fossil fuels. So that means all of the coal-fired power plants, all of the emissions from automobiles are going to be subject to Environmental Protection Agency regulations.
So they're going to, in other words, the EPA has taken the authority to regulate greenhouse gases. Are they already doing it? Where are we with that?
Well, they are in the process of putting together those rules. And so the coal and oil industries are trying to fight back by having their members of Congress that represent the coal and oil industries to try and block the Environmental Protection Agency from enforcing the law. So groups like Public Citizen and others are unified in our opposition to efforts to weaken the EPA's authority to protect public health through the regulation of greenhouse gases.
When you look at the gap between climate science, which is really completely, I mean, very definitive about human-caused climate change on the one hand, and then legislative action or the lack thereof on the other hand in the United States, which is not the same as in other countries, how do you make sense of what's going on? Is it just pure and simple our lack of, corporate control of campaigns?
Well, there's no question that America's democratic republic is highly susceptible to influence and control by well-funded corporate interests. And that's been true for a long time, but last year's Supreme Court decision in Citizens United that now allows corporations to have unlimited free speech in federal elections, with free speech meaning money, we are already seeing radical transformations of our democracy where corporations are able to wield enormous influence, whether it's the Tea Party movement, which is well established and well documented that it is funded by oil and gas and chemical interests that are hostile to the notion of federal regulation at the expense of protecting the public health, or whether it's the billions of dollars in campaign contributions and corporate lobbying that the oil, gas, and coal industries are heaping on Congress every year, we have a crisis. And thankfully, we still do have elections where people are able to vote, and we've got to make sure that in these elections, politicians hear from the people and not just the big campaign contributors and the corporate special interests.
We're talking to Tyson Slocum, who's the director of the energy program at Public Citizen in Washington. You are in Washington, D.C. You're observing this. You testified before Congress. One of the recommendations, one of the many recommendations the Public Citizen has made, is to end oil company subsidies, which seems like a rational path and even a popular path, which we seem to be unable to do as a nation. Talk about the economics of this, oil company subsidies, oil company profits, and the price of gas.
Sure. Well, the oil industry receives between $5 and $10 billion a year in subsidies courtesy of the American taxpayer. The largest subsidies of these are various special tax breaks and relief from having to pay royalties for the privilege of extracting oil and gas from federal land. Now, the Obama administration, to its credit, has put forward in both of his budgets proposals that would cut $35 to $45 billion in these oil company subsidies over 5 years. But Congress continues to fight efforts to cut back these subsidies. The most recent vote in June in the United States Senate failed by a wide margin to repeal just $3.5 billion in annual subsidies to the oil industry. So even after the BP disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, even after oil companies are consistently posting record profits while other sectors of the economy aren't, the oil industry continues to flex its political muscle in Washington, D.C., courtesy of its hundreds of millions of dollars in campaign contributions and lobbying. And again, I mean, I don't want to sound too cynical, but it's true that sometimes a very small group of special interests can subvert the entire democratic process to protect its own narrow interests at the clear expense of the greater good.
And no matter how the media are doing, the public don't seem to be able to apply enough pressure to our elected officials. How are the media doing? Are we on the level of, you know, the mainstream media, the big papers in D.C. and L.A. and New York and so on? How are we handling these questions that we're talking about right now?
Well, thankfully, we've got a number of not-for-profit, community-owned media outlets like this radio show I'm speaking on right now that have been essential in getting the truth out about our federal policies and the need to stand up to corporate power. Because whether you're talking about huge corporations that control CNN and Fox and all the major newspapers, they often are not willing to stand up to the corporate power because they themselves are massive corporate entities. So there is a crisis in the United States where the media has not adequately responded to the gradual takeover of our democratic republic by very powerful corporate interests. And it's really important that folks support, you know, not-for-profit, community-owned media enterprises in order to preserve some means of communicating the truth about what's going on in Washington, D.C. But it also comes down to citizens getting engaged. There can be no daily democracy without daily citizenship. And that means it's incumbent upon all of us, all the people listening out there, to learn the issues, to talk about them with your friends, your coworkers, your neighbors, your family members, and to make sure that you make noise about the issues that are important to you and that you vote. Our voting registration rates and voter participation rates in elections continue to be at very historic lows, and it's really critical that folks be engaged politically, that you arm yourselves with the information you need, and engage others around you on all of these issues. because the lower voter turnout is, the less engaged our citizenry is, the more powerful the special interests become.
As an observer of the legislature, you're in D.C., what do you think is, I know you can't predict the future, but the likelihood of federal climate legislation in the coming years? Do you see a growing traction for that, or is it just business as usual? What's going on?
Well, I do see a growing traction for it. I mean, we at Public Citizen, we've gotten behind a bipartisan Senate climate bill sponsored by Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State and Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine. It's called the CLEAR Act. It would require all producers and importers of fossil fuels in the American economy to have to pay for a permit. That payment would go directly to the federal government. The government would then promptly refund about 75% of all the money it collects directly back to families in the form of a check. That would help the vast majority of families more than offset the rise in energy prices that would come from putting a new cost on fossil fuels, that they would be more than compensated with their monthly dividend check, and there'd still be billions of dollars left over each year for the federal government to directly invest in the development and deployment of renewable energies and energy efficiency. So we already have a bipartisan bill, and I actually think that there's fairly good prospects that that Congress could get some action, regardless of how the November 2nd election turns out, in the next Congress. But it just means that it's all the more important that New Mexico continue ahead with its efforts to try to put its own climate policy into place, because the more states that act on curtailing greenhouse gas emissions, the more successful pressure there will be for a federal policy, because the utilities and oil companies operating in New Mexico will run to Congress and say, look, we want to avoid what's going on in New Mexico. We want the federal government to act so we have a unified national energy and climate policy. So I think that there is a lot of importance to what's going on in New Mexico, not just for the merits of implementing the policy, but for the possible influence it could have in putting together a good climate movement at the national level.
We're talking to Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen in Washington, D.C. Okay, we talked a moment ago about oil company profits, and $5 to $10 billion of those profits are contributed by you and me as taxpayers, but nevertheless, there they are, making a ton of money. Even they must know that the future is in clean energy, both for climate change reasons and for the reasons that the whole rest of the world and a lot of the United States is demanding clean energy. Are they putting money into that? Are they putting money into wind and solar with their vast amounts of profits that they're making?
Yeah, they're not putting enough into renewable energy and energy efficiency. And that's because when you've got a $1 trillion infrastructure for fossil fuels, that's always going to win the day. Renewable technologies can stand on their own, can compete and win against fossil fuels if they're given an opportunity to do so in the marketplace. But the problem that we encounter on a daily basis is that if you're a giant electric utility, you have a business model to build gigantic, centralized coal-fired power plants or nuclear power plants. And the last thing you want to do is see a series of incentives that would encourage households and small businesses to turn their homes and offices into independent power producers through the installation of rooftop solar, which at this point is cost competitive with new clean coal power plants or with new nuclear power plants. So the future is in decentralized, locally controlled energy sources, but the power structure of the energy industry actively fights against a decentralized system because it's in their business interest to preserve the centralized system. So it's really a constant fight, and we need to make sure that the average voter out there is engaged on these issues, knows the facts about the advantages of decentralized power systems like rooftop solar, advantages that has over what the utilities are promoting.
You know, when you do the math on this stuff, on the one hand, you make a big capital investment at the beginning if you want to put rooftop solar on your house, especially in a state like New Mexico where it's so sunny and everything. And then on the other hand, once you put it up, then you're just paying back your loan for the rooftop solar. And at a certain point, you break even and you are ahead. But still, you make a lot of money. You make tens of thousands of dollars, the person who is selling you these decentralized solar units. It seems like a great business.
Oh, yeah. This is where it could be a great engine of job creation. And again, for a utility that's seeking to build a new clean coal power plant or a new nuclear power plant, those utilities can't build those without massive government subsidies. So all of these new forms of energy are going to require some federal assistance. The question is, should we be delivering those subsidies to a handful of electric utilities, or should we be delivering that same dollar amount of incentives to millions of families and small businesses to enable them to create the same amount of power? To me, it's a no-brainer. The advantages to the economy, to working families, of incentivizing small-scale rooftop solar is huge compared to just shoveling the money as currently proposed to a handful of very powerful utilities.
There is always in my mind a red flag when people who profess to believe in the free market are actually looking at a market that isn't free at all, that's very much controlled and manipulated. And you've written extensively of the various ways in which that is true of the fossil fuel industries. It's not a free market system at all.
Right. I mean, when it comes to energy, there is active government barriers to alternatives. You know, we have in place massive government incentives to keep our addiction to fossil fuel going. And if you're a company like ExxonMobil or a giant utility, the last thing you want to see is the government effectively encouraging alternatives to your business model. So that's why the oil industry and the coal industry fight so hard against real effective development of renewable energy or investments in energy efficiency, because eventually it will mean the demise of the fossil fuel companies. And I'm not advocating for the oil companies and the coal companies to go out of business tomorrow, but there's no question that we're on an unsustainable path in terms of our consumption of fossil fuels. We're on an unsustainable path in terms of the catastrophic impacts of climate change from burning fossil fuels. And there is so much promise and so much deliverable technology today for renewables and energy efficiency that it is madness to not begin that transformation of our economy away from a fossil fuel one and towards a clean energy one. The barriers right now are educating the public and lawmakers and fighting the corporate special interests that continue to pull the strings in Washington, D.C. So that's what listeners out there need to understand, that we are in a fight for the future not only of the planet, but of the U.S. economy and of whether or not we're going to be at the forefront of creating the kind of jobs that are going to proliferate in the 21st century or whether we're going to be stuck using 19th century technologies. Granted, there's a lot of well-paying jobs right now in the petroleum sector. Those jobs aren't necessarily going to be there a generation from now. And it would be to the advantage of a state like New Mexico to get out in front of trying to incentivize the future of our energy system, which is going to be renewables and energy efficiency.
We've just got a half a minute left. I know there's a lot of people who are disappointed with the last 2 years of the presidential administration and Congress and so on. Can you just give them a good reason why they should go out tonight and tomorrow night to testify at these hearings here in New Mexico?
Because where Washington, D.C. has failed, New Mexico can lead. And so if folks feel frustrated at the lack of progress in Washington, D.C., you can get out and actually be part of putting New Mexico on the map as being a leader in 21st century clean energy development by getting out there and testifying and giving local politicians and regulators the cover they need to move forward aggressively with these first-in-the-nation regulations over greenhouse gas emissions. So it's really a great opportunity that New Mexicans find themselves in to help put their state in a leadership role. And it's something that could be a sense of pride for folks in the state.
Tyson Slocum is the director of Public Citizens Energy Program in Washington, D.C. And once again, tonight and tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, the public is invited to show up to testify on behalf of carbon regulation at the Old Para Building. For more information, you can go to newenergyeconomy.org. Tyson, thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.